I said, ow, you stabbed me. They said, no, I didn't. I said, okay.
I think I said, be still, boy.
No. He said, no, I didn't. I remember it. I'm the one that got stabbed here. I remember this.
No, I didn't.
And getting raised by Reverend Ray Wade here, you didn't argue with Dad.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Hayden Outbound Podcast, where we're Southern storytellers. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Robin.
I'm Jake Risher.
Oh.
That's right.
Did you hear that? A little last name. We're not going to go into it, though, because I want people to just slow roll and figure this thing out. But you did give them a wonderful hint with that Risher there. We got some great stories lined up today, family stories, life stories, and we're going to go into the woods and chase a couple of different kinds of animals. We got a gift. That's also be a secret. And then a little special nugget at the end. We think we're going to let Brother Blink do our scripture time today. And I know that'll bless your heart. But without further ado, Jake Risher, tell me a story.
I'm a resident, anesthesia resident, and what we do, we do multimodal pain control. If somebody's going to have surgery, we don't just try to use one technique to control their pain. We try to approach it from different angles, hit different receptors, and different multimodal pain control. Daddy had a multimodal disciplinary control. He liked to get us from different angles.
Different angles.
Yeah. So we would get the abuse. I mean, whippings. But
physical.
We'd also had something called grass drills. After the whipping, sometimes before the whipping, we did grass drill, but mainly grass drill was after the whipping. He would take us out into the yard, and we would have bear crawls, crab crawls. He would point to a tree across the field, run to that tree. You got 6 minutes and 38 seconds. Go! And we'd run to the tree, come back. But my least favorite was 6 inches. He'd make us do 6 inches. And he carried around this green plastic boat paddle. Hard plastic, not soft plastic. Hard plastic boat paddle.
It was with him at all times.
It was an incentive device. He would incentivize us to do work harder and listen better, and communication skills between me and my sister and stuff like that. And we couldn't stand that green boat paddle. But one day in particular, me and my sister must have said one word too much to him. And we was having grass drills and all this, and we'd done so much 6 inches. Me and my sister had went to a spot in our yard. We'd declare our 6 inches spot. We'd go and pick out all the stickers, and it was the most luscious paddock grass and stuff. And but this day he said, 6 inches over here. And he's in the stickers and all this, but it was in front of a window that inside our table was inside right there. And he made us do 6 inches, and he went inside, pulled up the blinds, opened that window, had Mama make him a sandwich. I never will forget.
While he sat
there and drank a cold glass of white milk, whole milk. Sit there, and we were doing 6 inches out in the yard.
What is?
And he'd pop up that green boat paddle.
Hold your leg 6 inches off the ground.
Leg lifts.
That's what we call leg lifts. I do. See, today, some might say I have a crack back. I think I have a deformity from doing so much six inches. He's done compressed my rump.
That's probably what
And probably with that boat paddle, too, had done some compression, decompressions. And,
Rob, you know. Man. But I bet you had six-pack abs.
No, I was still chubby. but that same day, I never will forget. That day was pretty rough. My sister did something I'm proud of her to this day. She woke up at 3 o'clock that morning and went and got that green boat paddle and a shovel. And went out to one of those trees out there, and
buried the boat paddle,
and didn't claim it for years.
He couldn't
didn't know where
the boat paddle was. Couldn't have. He just found something else. But
you couldn't find it, Blink.
No, it's in parts unknown today.
That's pretty.
She did a good job.
She did.
Jake, we have been able to meet your mother as well. We call her Miss Earl, and that's because of your daddy. And I know he ain't the only disciplinarian. You're bound to have something on Miss Earl.
Yeah. I tell you what, I tell you the story, the maddest she's ever been to me.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in bad trouble 2 times in my life growing up. Bad, bad trouble. And one, I don't think I can tell. There's statutes of limitations. I don't know the timeline. I mean, we ain't going to get into that one. But the other one, honestly, I don't think I should have gotten that much trouble on this one. It was honest. I mean, I'd messed up some parts of it, but it was really an honest mistake. I was in 11th grade, and my school did something called Vespers. And it was towards the end of the year. It was an event where the seniors would come in with a candle, and they'd light the 11th graders' candles, kind of passing on responsibilities and stuff. It was a ceremonial type deal, and they did some preaching at it. And the Friday afternoon before Vespers, we had Vespers practice. But I think I had a tennis match that day. I didn't get to go to Vespers practice. I had a tennis match. We went off and got beat by somebody because I'm not a tennis player. But so I missed Vespers practice, and that it was that Sunday night. So Dad had to preach, so he wasn't able to go. And I had drill that weekend. I was in the National Guard, and so I got there Sunday. Home Sunday about lunchtime.
Son, let me interject something here, though. All that week, your mama been telling you, Jake, get all this straight about Vespers practice. Get all this straight about Vespers practice. And your reply was, I got this, mama.
I agree. That was my one mistake right there. So she was making, all right, you got everything. Yes, mama. You know, I was 11th grade. You know, yes, mama, I got it. Mama, quit worrying, mama. I got it. You know, I got it, mama. Just let me be me, mama. Mama, you know, just chill, mama, chill. And I like to get there early for stuff. So I left. I was going to get to Vespers about an hour and a half early. I was going to talk to my friends, hang out, whatever. So I drove to the school. Wasn't nobody there. I was like, well, maybe I'm just an hour and a half early. Whatever. I sat there and played on my phone. Well, I sat there and played on my phone until my battery ran out dead. And now it's about 45 minutes before Vespers start. And I was like, I was like, let me go. My friend lived, one of my friends lived right down the road. I said, like, let me go see if he's, you know, what holdup is with him, you know. So I went to go see him, and I passed one of my classmates. I'm like, okay, at least people starting to show up maybe. So I went on to his house. He wasn't there. He'd already left. I was like, well, he wasn't at school. Yeah. So I was like, well, at least I know somebody's there. And I pulled up into school, but wasn't nobody there. I said, I might not know everything. Quite yet. So then.
Once again, let me interject. About this time, the school calls my wife and says, where is Jake? He's not here. He's supposed to be here. And my wife jumps into mama mode, which all y'all familiar with, and she hits the panic button. She comes flags me down out the pulpit. Says, Robin Jake's, she said, he done wrecked his car. He's in a ditch trying to get out of his car. And I thought she said that as fact. She was just saying that what she thought had happened. So I hit the panic button a little bit myself. Now I'll throw it back to Jake.
So I went to a gas station. And I was like, hey, man, I need to borrow your phone. He wouldn't give it to me. I literally gave him a watch off. And I was like, you hold this. I'll borrow your phone when I call mama. And it turns out that the school had notified her, like, hey, where's Jake? Vespers is starting. We can't find Jake. And mom was like, he should have been there an hour and a half ago. So like he said, mama thought the worst. Dad dismissed church and told people to start riding the roads looking for me. Football coach was riding. They about shut down Vespers. Football coach, everybody was riding the roads looking for me. Because unfortunately, that summer, one of the football players going to 2 days in the morning had wrecked and sat there for a pretty good while before somebody found him. So it was kind of like fresh on everybody's mind. And I called mama. I dialed that number. And I honestly didn't think I didn't know any of this was going on.
Right.
I said, mama. And when she heard the word mama, she knew it was me. She was crying tears of joy and tears of the mightiest she's ever been in her life. She started getting on to me, and I didn't. Vespers canceled. She said, you ain't gonna worry about Vespers. She said, you better get here. I said, where's it at? She said, it's a Crystal Springs First Baptist Church is where it was at.
Nice.
And she said, you better get here now. I said, I'm on the way, mama. So I pulled up into Vespers, and literally the class is walking in as I pull up. I run and jump in line. They're like, you're right here. I jump in line. And people are like, well, what's wrong with Scott? I was like, no, I just thought it was at the school. And he's like, oh, that's Jake being Jake. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I knew I was in pretty serious mm-hmm. trouble. And
you couldn't enjoy Vespers.
I could not. I knew it was coming. So anyway, Vespers commenced, and we did the ceremony, and whatever. And after that, I was like, "Well, boys, I might not be able to talk to y'all for a while. I'm gonna be in trouble."
Been good knowing you.
Yeah.
Enjoyed it.
So Dad got me, and we started walking outside, and we opened up the door to outside.
At this time, I was not as nearly as upset as his mama.
Because he was, it was an honest mistake. I didn't intentionally go to the wrong place. I just went to the wrong place. Mm-hmm. But when we turned that corner outside where my parked vehicle was, Mama had opened up every crevice, throwing stuff out of my vehicle.
I mean, the mayor's just out here, going, the principal of school's out here.
I said, "Mama, what are you doing?" She said, "Drugs. I'm looking for drugs." She said, "I know I didn't raise a child this stupid. You got to be on drugs."
Oh, man.
I said, "Mama, I ain't on no drugs." And Daddy said, "Let her look, son. Just let her look." And she didn't. Of course, I've never done a drug day in my
just
life.
Just let her look.
And I've never been, think I would be at a point in life when my mama thought drugs was a better option than being how idiotic I was at that point in time.
You're going to prove to her.
She was upset with me.
Mm. Did you ever do that again when she was on you about
doing
something?
I was never late for Vespers ever again.
I didn't, yeah.
Never late for Vespers ever again.
What about when she kind of started helping you remember things and making sure you kind of talked
okay with it?
For a while, I'm sure eventually it kind of, I mean, I was your, you know, typical teenage boy. And I'm sure, I mean, for a while, definitely 100% with Mama if she needed anything.
Uh-huh.
Because like Dad said, he wasn't that mad at me. So Mama was the only one I had to.
She done got embarrassed because everybody done got in on the search.
What happened was, like that other story we told about the truck, when they said your husband's on the phone, she thought the worst. Which mamas do that sometimes, and they can worry a little bit, which helps us, and we appreciate it. But Mama, you don't need to worry so much. She thought the worst. She thought it was in the ditch, struggling to get out. And she just got upset.
Yeah.
Mine took over.
Yeah.
Man, boy, she was upset.
I've never seen her upset. Robin says she can get upset.
Oh, yeah. She's a powder, too, now. She'll soul up.
Watch it now.
Yeah, I'm not.
Earl, we didn't say anything.
She'll soul up. I can say it.
I don't know where that went.
Now, he's a firecracker. He's more of a, you got to watch him. He'll pop off.
Yeah.
Mama, soul up. She wouldn't talk to me in like 2 weeks. Wouldn't say a word to me.
Silent treatment.
Soul up. She'd soul.
Mm. Mm.
Let me tell one real quick while we busting the gut laughing at everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was a young preacher. I mean, real young.
It's serious.
It is serious already.
In this time frame of life.
That's right.
I was a young preacher, and I couldn't get no nursery workers. And I'd ask for volunteers, I'd beg for volunteers, and couldn't get no nursery workers. And we had a thriving nursery in the back of the church, and folks ain't gonna come to church if they worried about their babies. And so I got up in the pulpit one Sunday, and I said, "I've asked for volunteers for the nursery, I asked for volunteers for the nursery, and I ain't got any. I'm going to work in the nursery." And I left them, dropped the mic.
Mic drop.
I left them, went to the nursery, started playing with babies. They looked a little sidewise at me. And finally, they sang a song. Somebody prayed. They didn't have no preaching that day, that morning. They come back there and got picked up all the babies from the nursery. And I was nice. I was super nice. And my old chairman of deacons there, he said, "Preacher, they gonna run your tail off from here. But listen, folks can't worship if they're worried about something."
Mm-hmm.
"And least of all, their children. We need nursery volunteers. And when your pastor asks you for some, help him out. Or he may walk off one day and drop the mic.
Raise your hand. Robin, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in that Baptist church that day when you did that.
One time, another time at church, I preached on cliques in the church.
Cliques?
Cliques. Like,
oh, okay. Okay.
I knew a guy named Andy Click. I was like, what you got against Andy Click?
Well, I thought she was talking about people that kind of
click at their pens
when, like they, pen when they talk. A little
C-L-I-Q-U-E.
Yes.
That's
some
cliques. I only got that.
I got a wireless mic. I walked outside. I was beating on the doors and the windows like I was trying to get into church, but I couldn't get into church for all the cliques.
You didn't break nothing, did you?
What just happened?
That was my elbow.
He clicking over there.
But I thought that's pretty creative.
No. I'm as confused right now as I can be.
I ain't gonna lie. I don't know what he said. Say it again.
Hold on.
Say the line again. Hit it one more time. Back up.
Maybe
try again.
Maybe it'd be better the second time.
What about the clicks?
It was pretty creative.
I had a bunch of clicks in the church, I thought. And so I used a wireless mic, and I walked outside, and they could still hear me talking, and I acted like I was trying to get in the church, trying to tear in the church, but I couldn't get in the church because of
the clicks.
Because they were all so tight together, they wouldn't let nobody in.
Wouldn't let nobody in.
I got you. Creative.
Hey, let me tell you who you ain't bought on this story. You ain't bought Phil in on this story.
He's on the outside looking at me.
No, I am 100% with it. But here's where I'm at. Just being straight up, Blaine. If you had 100 people in the congregation that day, how many people understood what you were trying to do?
They understood perfectly.
They want no more
said,
clicks.
I'm trying to get in the church because I can't get in the church for all the clicks.
Well, let me ask you another question. At what point in time in this skit did you say, okay, now really let me in?
Oh, I just walked in.
Oh, you could have got in the whole time.
Yeah, I could have got in the whole time. I pretended.
So you really didn't have a click problem. You got right back in the church.
Metaphor.
This is the master of metaphor.
He is the master of metaphor.
Let me tell y'all, just I gotta come clean about something right now. Just about
a confession.
Confession
about time. Not getting stuff or getting stuff right.
You was the one that really buried the
No, my sister buried that, okay. that green paddle.
All right.
But Dad, on one of y'all's most viewed videos on Instagram, a goose joke. He butchered it. That is my joke.
Rob,
he didn't ask for permission, and he butchered it. That ain't how it goes. Would y'all like to hear how it properly goes?
I want you to, just like this is the first time we've ever heard, I want you to take it from the top.
Well, of course, now listen. It ain't going to be as good.
No. It can't be worse than what he just
but
told.
But it's horrible. I don't understand.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard him tell.
You don't need no clicks in the church.
I mean, that was
pitiful.
Can't
be no better. Worse than that. It's got to be better.
All right, so y'all know geese. They migrate, right?
Right.
Y'all know why they migrate?
It's because there's more geese on one side.
No,
that's later on in the joke. That's okay. You saved that right there.
Okay,
they migrate because temperature change. They want to be in a certain type of climate for food and reproductive purposes and stuff like that.
Okay.
And if y'all ever notice, as they're migrating, they always fly in a V. Mm. You know why that is?
Mm-hmm.
Aerodynamics.
The front goose will create a draft. And he's flying the hardest, and he creates a draft for all the other geese in that V and those lines so they can fly easier and they don't have to expend as much energy and they can travel over long distances. And when that one wears out, he'll go to the back line where there's the most draft, and that's how they can fly a long distance. It's very fascinating how they do all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Have you also ever noticed that one side is always longer than the other side?
Because there's more geese on that side.
There you go.
That's it. So you got to get that lead into about all that scientific
stuff.
Too much lead in.
Let's talk for just a minute about this. So your daddy is the master of metaphor, hands down. I don't know another person who can color up a picture like he can. His words. Number two that your daddy's really good at, he's a master of brevity.
Can you explain that word?
He gets right to the point as fast as you can get there and still know.
Still know.
Still get the goodie. Mm-hmm. He is a master at
it. He can just, he don't even need to lead in. He's that good, huh?
He heard that and he said, all right, I can cut.
All that.
And just get right here to it.
You want me to tell you one more thing? He likes that joke so much and story so much, he told it last night at Lee Station.
Did he get any of the lead in?
No, right again.
And that's after I've done told him, hey, you did that joke wrong, so next time you do it.
It ain't wrong in his mind. You ain't convinced him yet.
That's the joke now.
That's the joke. That's how he tells it. He said, yeah, y'all know geese. That's it.
Geese.
You know how they fly in a V? You know how there's always more geese on one side than the other?
Oh, one side longer than the other.
So you don't have none of it. You don't have the lead in or the punch. You just it.
I feel like that would have been sufficient. You know how there's more on one side than the other.
Well, what's the punchline then?
That side's longer.
That's You back. That's reversing it.
Yeah.
That's a Trent.
That's Trent.
Trent Ellis.
I got a story about a goose. You want to hear it?
Well, it ain't the same one your daddy told, is it?
No, this is a true story about a goose. It ain't a joke. Whoa, it's a story.
Whoa!
Now, Brendan did try to cook a goose.
No, this is a different goose. It's a different goose.
Did you pick it?
No.
Okay.
We'll hear your goose story.
First, you need an insight to the character involved in this goose story. One is myself, and the other one is a guy who I cherish named Mr. Tom McLemore.
Cat Daddy.
Cat Daddy. He's known by a lot of people as Cat Daddy.
That's how I want you to refer to him in this story.
No, he's Mr. Tom to me. That's all I've ever called him. That's all I ever call him.
Cat Daddy, go better.
Cat Daddy's great. He actually wrote a book called Cat Daddy Chronicles. It's a good book. I 100% recommend. But anyway, Mr. Tom, he was raised in a little town in Mississippi. Me and him have a lot of similarities. His dad was a Southern Baptist preacher. He grew up very rural, very country, disciplined well, as we have discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But he made a pretty good living in some financial world and stuff. But he didn't really let that change his other side of life, loving hunting and fishing and stuff like that.
He just got to do it in real good places.
Really good places. Over the years of hunting together, I kind of got an open invitation to go hunt on this place called Montgomery Island. It's a private equity hunt club in the Mississippi River. It's an island in the Mississippi River.
Have anything to do with your hat?
Yep. Okay. Same place.
I was just wondering.
All right. Montgomery Island.
You got an open invite.
World renowned. I feel like it should be.
We do have an open invite. Is that what you said, Ron?
No, he does.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Tom.
Cat Daddy.
Yeah, Cat Daddy.
Amazing deer hunting. And deer over there are deer. Like, they ain't getting chased by a bunch of rednecks and stuff. They're running around grunting and fighting all the time. Just big deer. Turkey hunting, turkeys galore. Just world class. And that deer camp is actually a true deer camp, I feel like. Like, they don't draw straws to see which stand they get. And Mr. Tom, actually, they tried to enforce a rule that you had a board where you had to put where you were going. And Mr. Tom straight up told him, he said, if something happens to me, y'all come look. Don't look wherever I say I was. That's not where I'm at. So they said, well, Mr. Tom ain't gonna do it. I ain't gonna do it either. But it's a deer club, and you hunt no feeders, no nothing like that. It's real hunting. It ain't just like go sitting on a stand.
Okay.
And I love it over there. It's probably one of my favorite places in this world. And so 2 years ago, we were out there deer hunting, me and Mr. Tom, and we were kind of hunting in the middle of the rut, hunting hard. And one more thing about Mr. Tom is he has real trouble sleeping. He don't sleep. 2 hours, 4 hours, he don't sleep good. And it takes a lot for him to go to sleep. So he has to take some pretty strong medications to get him to go to sleep. He won't sleep. And a lot of times he'll take his medication and fall asleep watching the news. And he has his own recliner, Mr. Tom, Cat Daddy's recliner.
I like it.
And he sleeps with his hands over his chest like this. Pretty loud snore. But that's how he sleeps at the deer camp. And it's about 1 o'clock in the morning. Me and him were both asleep. TV was on. Fire was going still a little bit. And you ever had like something wake you up, but not like startle you, but it's just something, that, a constant noise that you kind of like, for a minute, you don't know if it's in your dream or what it is. I woke up to Mr. Tom calling me very like a cadence, monotone. Jake. Jake. Jake.
Broken record.
I said, what was it? I said, Mr. Tom. He said, Jake. I need you. And at that time, Mr. Todd wouldn't wake me up unless it was serious. I was, what's wrong, you know? I said, what's going on? He said, I think I'm tripping. I said, Mr. Todd, what are you talking about? I'm starting to think of a stroke, like, what's going on? And also another thing, I like to sleep with a lot of less articles of clothing, the better. So I'm kind of getting dressed and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I said, what's going on, Mr. Todd? He said, there's a goose in here. I said, a goose. And I was walking out of the room I was in, and the door opens up to the TV, the back wall of the TV, the fireplace, and Mr. Tom's chair. You can see the outline of the chair from the fireplace. And there's a kitchen island running along this wall right here, and the front door is right on the side of it. But you can't see the front door from the kitchen island. I said, Mr. Tom, there ain't no goose in here. What's wrong? And by that time, I had clothed myself enough to come out into the common areas, and I walked up. He said, oh, yeah? What's that? And he pointed. And approximately a foot and 7 inches from his fingertip was a snow goose looking at us like this. I said, that's a goose. And he did this right here. He said, I knew it. Just like that.
Back to sleep.
And he said, I said, it's a goose. He said, I just wanted you to come here so you believe me. And I started, I was like, it didn't come out of the fireplace. I said, how did it get in here? No broken windows or nothing like that. He said, I don't know, but it cannot spend the night.
But that's legit.
It's a real goose.
And you have no idea how it got in
there. Well, later on, come to find out, I coaxed it outside.
Yeah.
Got it out of there. And as soon as I got it flushed out of the door, laughter erupted from the yard. And there were some people that had partaken in some activities. And they were riding around the deer camp and found an injured snow goose.
Mm.
And they thought it would be comical to place that said goose inside somebody's cabin. Mm-hmm. But they didn't expect Mr. Tom just to be sitting right there by the door. But I said, Mr. Tom, there ain't no goose in here. He said, oh, yeah? What's that?
It's a goose. There he is.
A goose.
I love a good hunting camp, though.
Man,
that one is a phenomenal one.
That one is where it's...
Big fireplace.
It's amazing.
I mean, you can drop me a pin on it.
Nope. Hey, I'd drop you a pin, but you can't get there.
Can't get there from here.
You got to have a boat. It's an island.
It's in the Mississippi River.
Mm. How many acres is it?
About 4,000.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those equity hunting, so you own a share of it.
I don't know nothing about that.
Well, we'll talk later about that.
I ain't got $30.
Well, you wouldn't be a part of this club.
That's exactly why I don't know nothing about it. I ain't got no Montgomery Island hat.
I might get you one of those.
Mm. Man. But yeah, I can have a hat.
Yeah, you might get a hat for
$30. $39.99. Yeah. Get you a hat.
Yeah.
Man. You want to tell another one? You want Jake to tell another one? What you want to do? What you feeling?
I'll pitch it to Jake again. He's got some good ones.
I can tell you, me and Dad, I don't know, y'all didn't know this, but tomorrow morning we're flying out and going to Canada.
Canada.
Uh-huh. We got a great opportunity to go duck hunting in Canada. An outfitter, a Duck Creek outfitter, called Dad and said they find them so hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
They want to come up and go duck hunting with us. So me and Dad are flying out to Canada and going duck hunting, but... Last time I went to Canada, I had an accident. I went up there twice bear hunting, and I hope this don't happen again, but me and my grandfather left from Philadelphia, Mississippi, and drove to Canada, went up, and we hit the border above Maine, and it was late in the evening, and rolled up to the border check-in area, and lady opened the door and said, Bonjour, welcome to Canada. Some other French words. And Paul, honestly, I don't know if he was trying to be funny or just thought this was French. He said, hola, señorita.
No.
He said, you're going to have to excuse my French. That's all I know.
No,
it wasn't 10 minutes later. They had us in interrogation room. No lie. They separated us, put us in interrogation rooms, made us sit there, and we had to go through interrogations.
I would have loved to have been in Grunt's interrogation.
Hola, señorita.
Yep.
I love me some Grunt.
Let me tell you what. That ain't the only French Grunt knows. I heard him say some French while we was over there.
Yeah, it was non-producible. Grunt has one of the best stories that I've heard since this journey that we've been on. Unfortunately, it was
had to hack that.
Yeah,
but it is an amazing story.
What story is it?
It's when he got caught.
When D hit him with them red rings in the back.
Okay,
man, so what I want to do is. I would drive back over there to get that story told
in a just a little bit different way.
Just soften it a little. I'll
tell y'all this right now. It hasn't been reflected on here because it gets on camera or something on it. But Grunt is one of the funniest men.
He really is.
It ain't like storytelling. He can tell stories too, but it's just his one-liners daring to people.
Just so dry.
It's the funniest person I know.
Yeah,
but
it's
just
about time for another little tale with Grunt.
And let me say this about it: he has taken so many people hunting and fishing.
There's no telling how many people's killed their first deer on Paul's legs.
First turkey.
Yeah, back in the day, if somebody put a gun in my head and said you have to kill a turkey tomorrow morning, you can take anybody you want to. I wouldn't choose Preston Pittman, Will Primos. I wouldn't.
Nothing wrong with them.
Great turkey, amazing turkey hunters. I took Paul, that Joker, can turkey hunt.
If you had the full list, unlimited
access, I would
have
faith in nobody else but Paul. Because I know what we'd do. We'd try a turkey hunt. If it didn't happen, we'd just go shoot one with a rifle. We was going to kill a turkey. If it came down to life and death.
Hey, look,
I ain't never done, I ain't never done it.
He did say life or death.
We would kill a turkey. I'm full faith, no doubt about it.
He would not stop until the job was done.
We'd kill a turkey, 100%. Paul was good.
Are you in trouble? Well, we hope you're not. But just in case you are, we know a good lawyer. Whitney Island here in Hayden, Alabama has law services. Or maybe if you're not from Hayden, I'm sure she'd be happy to hear from you. So check her out at islandlaw.com. We appreciate Whitney and her sponsoring the show.
I guess I was around 8 years old. Daddy used to be part of this forum called Old Gobbler. And it was a old internet before Facebook and all this stuff where people would get on there and talk about turkey hunting. And what was your handle? Preacher? What was it?
Yeah, Preacher.
Preacher. And these people would mess around and invite us. And he'd take them up on it. He'd be all right, win.
Yeah.
And
bet.
Say less, God bless. And we'd go. And one person invited us to come up to New York turkey hunting, and country had come to town. Mm-hmm. We got up there. We couldn't go to the gas station and get a Snickers without drawing a crowd. People be asking us to talk, say stuff, poking us with sticks, see what kind of noises we made. They'd never seen that before in our lives. We were hunting in upstate New York, and like I said, I was 8 years old. And at this point in time, I'd never killed a longbeard before. I'd killed some jakes, but never killed a longbeard. And Daddy killed his turkey early on the hunt, so then he kind of took me, made his mission to kind of get me a turkey. And, man, it was beautiful up there rolling. It's kind of like northern Alabama, rolling hills. I'd call them mountains from back when I was home in Mississippi. But one thing about it up there is everywhere you went, there was these little rock formations about a little less than waist high. And from the Civil War, in case the South ever advanced that far, they'd have a fighting position to fight behind. But man, they'd lock up a turkey. You think a turkey won't cross a creek? Well, he won't fly over a rock formation either. They'd be running all out through the hills. But it was the last afternoon before the, it was the last afternoon. We had one more morning to hunt afterwards, but we had this turkey going. He was coming. And we were right on the side of this road, but man, he was coming. We had done got him across one rock pile and wasn't no one between us. He was a dead turkey, you know. And some northerner decided it was a time and place to stop and cut some firewood right there where we was. He didn't know we were there, but
home like
a native New Yorker.
Bless their souls. But anyway, he cut the firewood, turkey ran off, but we knew where the turkey was in the area that he was killable, you know. So last morning in New York, I'm, you know, trying to get my turkey, and it was one of those picturesque moments or mornings, and me and Daddy got out before daylight. We kind of knew where the turkey was, but not exactly. And I remember it was falling down a tree, and we sat on it. And experienced turkey hunters can tell you which birds are going to wake up first. This bird's going to sound off first. This bird's going to sound off this type, and kind of know what time the turkeys should be waking up with which bird sounds and stuff throughout the morning, because they all wake up at different stages, kind of. And it was kind of still almost pitch black dark. And before any other bird sounded off, right, let's go. And so there's a big mountaintop. Me and Daddy got up on top of that mountain. He was right off that mountain in a little draw. And we got up there and sat up there. And what kind of call did you have? True double?
Like, yeah.
Primo true double. And Dad called a little bit. double gobbling. Mm. And he didn't wait long. He still flew down early. Flew down right in front of us. And I'm a little kid. And there's some vegetation up above us. And I can't see him. He's 15, 20 yards right in front of us. But I can't see him. And they like, shoot him. Shoot him. I said, I can't see him. But I had one little opening going off right out in front of us. A little opening. And he was walking. And he said, he's going to come out of the opening. Get ready, get ready, get ready. And he came out of that opening. He just kept on walking. I didn't shoot him. Dad's like, why didn't you shoot him? I don't know. And he walked a few steps that way and turned to come back. You hear him drumming. He's like, all right, when he comes out open, I'm going to stop him. He come out open. That's right there. Took his head up. And he just kept on walking. Dad's like, why didn't you shoot him? You know, and to this day, I don't know why I didn't shoot him, but I'm kind of glad I didn't at that time because there was a big boulder right out in front of us, a big, huge, bigger than a truck. Rock cropping come up out of the earth on top of this mountain. And just like I couldn't see, that turkey couldn't see that hen either. That turkey pitched up on top of that rock where he could see over, down, all that. As soon as he did that, he made a mistake. So I shot him. And that turkey started flopping down that mountain. So me and Daddy took off running. I ran up to the rock, and Daddy slid down the mountain trying to chase it. It wasn't completely dead. And Daddy's going in mortal combat with this turkey hand in hand. I'm sitting there, 8-year-old. You want me to shoot him, Daddy?
No.
Daddy, you want me to shoot him? I can shoot him. And don't shoot him. He'd go back fighting turkey. Oh, you sure I can shoot him? No, don't shoot him. Don't shoot him. Hey, I'd go get the turkey. But finally, we got turkey. And one of my favorite pictures is I got my feet hanging off the rock ledge and holding that turkey in the first long beard.
In New York. Daddy called him up.
And if your daddy wouldn't have stopped you, you'd have had a picture of Longbeard and Robin Richard.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what it sounds like to me.
That one might go for the record books.
Yeah, that's right. The biggest one I ever seen.
Big old turkey.
I picked up turkey hunting equipment for 2 or 3 hours. I said I lost going down there fighting that turkey. A slate call, mile call, glove, head net.
Scattered
down the mountain.
Get it over, everything else.
There's only one thing on your mind.
Yeah, I want to get that turkey.
Now all turkey hunts wasn't that dandy with Dad. I've had some pretty rough turkey hunts with him. One in particular. This was that same spring, back in Mississippi. We was hunting a little piece of property. It was me, my dad, and Paul. And it was a green field. It had a logging road cut off on the backside. And we got that morning hooted. It got right down that logging road. And so we sat up on the kind of where that logging road and green field met. And I sat down beside Dad. And Paul got about 10 yards behind us. And I sat down. Dad's right here, right where he's at right now. And, of course, I'm young, and anywhere you got an inexperienced turkey hunter, you want to make sure all the vegetation's out of the ways and leaves scratch back where they make less noise and make sure you can swing your gun and not bump stuff. And there's a pretty good vine that ran right beside me, come over on this side of me. And Dad tried to break it. It's a pretty good sized vine. It was green. And he hollered back. He said, "Grunt, let me see your pocket knife." And Paul always carried a yellow-handled case pocket knife. Trapper, two blades, you know. Paul got a big old bee, leaned over, got that knife out. Come out here, you know, tossed it to Dad. Well, Dad gobbling, you know. And Dad's trying to be quiet. He gets up on his knees, and he's right here, and he's cutting this vine with his knife right here. And I'm sitting here, you know, trying to be still and quiet, you know, paying attention, you know, trying to, you know. And when that American steel blade went through that vine, Dad had a lot of pressure on it. he stabbed my leg down to my femur, all deep. And we did measurements. It's deep. I said, "Ow, you stabbed me." They said, "No, I didn't." I said, "Okay."
I think I said, "Be still, boy."
No, he said, "No, I didn't. I remember it. I'm the one that got stabbed here. I remember this."
No, I didn't.
Getting raised by Reverend Ray Wade here, you didn't argue with Dad.
Mm.
And if Dad said he didn't stab you,
he didn't stab you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember that morning it was a little chilly. I had on two pair of jogging breeches and a pair of camouflage overalls, and my leg hurt. And he said, "I remember you said that's that vine that fell down and hit you in the leg. That's what it was. The vine fell down and hit me in the leg. That's what you said." Uh huh. And I looked down, it was just red. Red.
Mercy.
And when I said, "Daddy, you did stab me." And his next words, I'll never forget, "Boy, you ain't going to cry around me. If you're going to go cry, you got to sit with your pa."
Wow.
So I went over there and sat with pa, sat his big old belly, a perfect seat. I sat down, his leg propped up against his belly. About that time, turkey flew down, walked right out in front of us, and I shot one of them. And,
With the tourniquet on your leg or without?
No, without tourniquet. What we did medically is we cleaned a turkey with the same knife, and then they slapped a Power Rangers Band-Aid on me and sent me to school.
Power Ranger Band-Aid.
A white Power Ranger Band-Aid on it and sent me to school that same day.
We got a picture of him holding that turkey in his little short breeches, school breeches, and a Band-Aid on his leg, a little stream of blood running out.
The way we measured it was, this was Paul's everyday carry knife he's had for years, and he had done sharpened it so much the blade had starting to thinned out.
Mm-hmm.
But my cut I still have today, the scar, is so wide that we measure how wide my cut is to measure the blade. That thing went that deep in my leg, and I was 8 years old. It
probably did get down to the bone.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Jake, you just blessed me more than you could have imagined. Your daddy wears me out continuously for one of my character flaws. You know what he says?
What's that?
That I'm unsympathetic.
The
story you just told me sounds like
a glimpse in the past.
Brother Blink here. Also,
did you have a pass? You got a pass, sympathy. Rob?
Yeah,
you've been reformed.
Tell me why you get a pass in this situation.
Well, I raised good youngins.
You ain't got there yet.
Yeah, I'm still waiting.
I got a doctor. His sister's a doctor and a pharmacy, and we got a Marine. Now, I don't take no credit for it, though. His mama did a good job raising them.
You ain't addressed your lack of sympathy yet.
That's called deflection. Deflection.
Yeah.
I'm like Teflon. I don't want that to stick to me.
Well, I just hope that, I know I'm going to remember this story. And then every time in the future that you tell me that I'm unsympathetic, I'm just going to say, what was it? A case?
No.
Trapper?
I think what you need to say is just say, trapper. What you say, if you're going to cry around me, you're going to go sit with Paul.
You know, we may have never been invited to the Montgomery Island there.
It's on its way, just so you know. I'm it is a mission.
Yeah. But we have been invited to go alligator hunting in Louisiana.
Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. In October.
Better be careful. Trust me, from experience. Last year, I was lucky enough to get drawn for a Mississippi alligator tag. And I had a buddy of mine that said he's done it before. He's going to go with us, and he knew all the ins and outs of it and all this and all that. And he already knew the location we was going to go. We was going to go to an oxbow off the Mississippi River. And this oxbow, very importantly, the state line ran imaginary, not a magic marker, no string, no buoys, imaginary line ran through the middle of that oxbow. One side was Mississippi. One side was Louisiana. And, of course, we hunted. And the gators were getting pressured on Mississippi side because Mississippi alligator season opens up a week earlier than Louisiana alligator season, if y'all didn't know. And so what did the alligators do? they swam over to the other side. They don't know where the line is. Nobody messing with them.
Yeah.
I mean, alligators can be alligators, right? And me and my buddy was just going to ride over there and just look at them.
Yeah.
We're just going to look at them, just see. And we even tried to kind of coax them over to the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of invite them over to...
Tell them how nice Mississippi
is. Yeah, come on in. The water's nice over here, you know.
The water is fine.
And that didn't work. They were just going to stay around Louisiana. And we got kind of aggravated with it. I said, you know what, man? Let's just do it.
Mm.
This ain't nobody out here. We can see all the other boats got lights on them. If there's anybody out here, they wouldn't have lights on their boats, you know? Let's just do it. Shouldn't have done that. Sure enough,
Game Warden has special tools.
We hooked up to a big old alligator. Reeled them in, fought them, shot them. And when we did, blue lights. They had drones, people laying out there with ghillie suits on the bank.
You're lying.
No, I'm not. And they got me. Got both of us. And
they got me.
Got me good. We had to help them load the alligator up into their boat. And in the state of Louisiana, the way their criminal charges, wildlife violation, they're a criminal charge. And you have to pay the state of Louisiana restitution that said alligator, even though they took it.
You didn't get no alligator tail, no boots, no nothing.
I got my rights read to me, is what I got. And let me tell you something kind of funny to this.
But you got to tell me, what was the penalty?
Kill an alligator in Louisiana.
No, I know what you did wrong, but what did you have to pay?
Money.
Oh, man.
A bunch of it.
A right smart of it.
Did you have to go to jail?
No, they did. What they did is they separated us, me and my best friend. And because they got me into their boat, I was technically detained, so I had to get my rights read to me. I never had cuffs put on. But it was kind of cool sitting there in the moment when he started, you have the right to remain silent. I was like, this is what they do in the movies. That's pretty cool.
I don't care what you say.
In that moment in time, I said, this story will be remembered for the rest of my life. And honestly, the money we had to pay, what is an experience you could pay with that same amount of money and remember it for the rest of your life, guaranteed?
Well, you ain't told me how much money it was.
It was a lot of money. But it's something kind of funny about it. If you Google my name, it pops up, doctor, Louisiana man, criminal charge, alligator poacher arrested in Louisiana. You know, it's kind of funny. You see doctor.
Wow.
Man detained and apprehended in Louisiana for illegal violations of alligators and stuff like that. It's kind of comical.
Was that, so you would just say the temptation,
it was
just finally took over.
Devil got me.
That is a prime example of if you stare at that temptation too long.
If you let it in your life long enough,
it is going to take you farther than you ever planned.
You know, Daddy always said, you can let that bird fly over your head. You can't stop that. But you don't have to let it build a nest.
You ain't got to let it build
and
a nest.
Ah, man, it was that.
It built a nest. It was hatching eggs.
That looked like an osprey. Big old osprey nest
up there.
It's just too good to be true almost.
Golly. You're
swimming all around you and everything.
It's crazy that you talk about that. I got a very similar alligator story, but mine happened when you saw that.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. We're kindred spirits. I'm not going to bore you with it. We'll talk about it after
dinner. Sounds good. Yeah, it almost comes natural to me, too. I got to fight the temptation. Yeah.
That from Paul or from?
Both. School bus shootings.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, before you see, it was
you
before.
See how, let's clarify that just in case y'all haven't watched the previous episode. It was a let's be real clear here. It was
off.
A deer hunt from a school bus.
With children on it.
Jake said that. I was just going to kind of make it vague, but yeah. But anyway, nobody was hurt.
The deer was hurt.
Yeah.
Illegally, but yeah. Yeah, it says apple don't fall off the tree.
I want to find some of those children.
And just get the
first-hand point of view.
Mm-hmm. There ain't no doubt somebody on that school bus remembers that.
I'm sure they're all traumatized. They probably all remember it.
If you're watching the show and you're one of those children who got to experience
in 1980,
the assassination, just leave us a little comment and say, here, that was me. I was on the bus that day.
Next story.
Next story, he said.
That same guy that I was hunting that alligator with, and by the way, I will, for the cameras, to his dad, his parents, his wife.
You apologize.
He did not want to do it. It was all me.
That was Jake's.
I love
that
was, accountability.
That was all me. He was guilty by
association
because he can't swim in the alligator water. Well, he would have done it. He was. I was committed to do it. But yeah. But anyway, his name's Hunter Rich. He's a firefighter down here in Mountain Brook, Alabama.
Growing up, you get those gun safety tips from your grandparents and your parents. Mm-hmm. And one of the ones that I remember vividly is always know where that barrel's pointed. You can talk about the safety and the trigger and all, and whether you have a bullet in or not, but that was the number one. Said, always remember that, no matter what else is going on. And I believed in it. You know, I said, okay, I'm going to remember that one. I hunted behind my grandmother's house almost every evening. And just as a courtesy, she didn't ask me to do this, but it also lets me see her for just a minute. I would always go up by her house. I'd knock on the door, and she had a little porch, wooden porch that came out of her door, and she would come out, and I'd be having my hunting stuff on. And we'd talk for a few minutes, and I'd say, hey, I'm going back in here. I'll be out after dark. If you hear me shoot, don't worry about it. It's just me back there. And she was like, okay, baby. Now, I always like to have a shell racked in when I was walking because you just never know when you're going to see that good one. And so she's standing there on the porch right above me, leaning on the banister talking to me. I'm right there, and I went to rack the shell into my gun, and that memory came back, that instruction. Always know where your gun's pointed. And right before I racked the bolt, I turned my gun this way just a little bit. And when that bolt hit, that gun exploded. Boom! Right there in my hand. If I had been just nonchalant and that gun barrel would have been pointed in any way at her, should have been not my grandmother alive anymore on that porch.
Yep.
So there's just a little lesson. If nobody's ever given you that lesson, always, always know where the end of that barrel is pointed.
I remember you calling me that day. It was like, almost messed up.
Shane, we got a gift.
Yeah. We sure do, but I don't have my knife on me because I did not add it to my britches when I changed a while ago.
It's just best not to boast.
I normally say my britches are on. And I got it. It's from Josh up here in Bridgeport. He said, I'm going to send y'all something. And I said, well, we'll open it on the next show, buddy.
Send it on.
I don't know. Maybe we should have. I could have done better with a. I mean, it.
Who opened that knife to you?
Come on now. Y'all ain't superstitious, are you?
Who opened it?
Look, you got us some t-shirts. He said he's going to send us some of his Bible study group. Brothers of Grace.
How about iron that? Sharpens iron.
Isn't that cool?
Oh, did it get blank one too?
Yep, he sure did.
That shirt was blank.
Well, thank you, Brothers Mr. Josh. Grace,
appreciate you for the shirts.
Well, that's a heavyweight. I mean, that's good stuff.
You'll be able to wear that one, won't you?
I love it. Iron sharpens iron.
Thank you.
And then we had some comments this week.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me say this. We had some comments. I'm sorry, this is going to be a little bit delayed. I almost messed up. I forgot that we've actually worked ahead a couple of weeks now. The episode that we did with Trent, Dylan, Rob, you know, we showed the Brunt boot that we've been showing that we like. And the comment was made, I think that boot's too heavy, or isn't that boot heavy?
I saw that.
You see that comment? Mm-hmm. Well, I thought that we would take a moment to just show the boot one more time and give a little feedback on that. On what was said.
Grab it, Rob. Get it.
I want to knock him cards.
If only we had a scale.
Yeah. And here's what I want to say. We're going to be totally honest. We're going to shoot you straight, right?
As transparent as we know how to be.
I don't know what a heavy boot is to somebody.
I know what a heavy boot is to me.
I know what a heavy boot is not.
It has a rubber sole on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to make a rubber sole any super lighter. Duper light. It ain't going to be a running shoe. Mm-hmm. I've never had a pair of boots that was a running shoe. But what it is, to me, for a boot, here's my honest opinion. Is it heavier than running shoe? Yeah. Is it super heavy for a boot?
Is it lighter than a Wolverine?
You never owned
Wolverine? Those things are pretty.
Golly, they're like wearing bricks.
But
like strapping a 2x6 to your feet.
A 2x6.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a 2x6. I definitely wouldn't say that. But I've worked in them, stood in them. Super comfortable boot. And that is the Baron 6-inch. And if you use code HAP, going to bruntworkwear.com/HAP, you get $10 off your order. And you can see if you think they're heavy or not.
Yeah, because if you don't like them,
I think you send them back. But I think if you get this boot and you put it on your foot and you walk around a little bit and you feel how comfortable it is, I think you'll keep it. But that's up to you. I don't know if you'll keep it or not, but I've kept mine.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. But yeah, once again, bruntworkwear.com. We'll have a link in the description. And when you get there, when you get your checkout, type in HAP as your code and that'll get you $10 off. And we appreciate Brunt for supporting the Hayden Outbound podcast. What about scripture time, Rob? We're throwing people curveballs today. You going to take the scripture time?
I'd love to.
All right.
Hey, Rob preached for us last night, but he preached in the dark. And he told us, he said, hey, you going to preach out of the Bible? You better be able to read it. Because it was dark as it could be, but he had to just go off the words that he knew in his heart, didn't you, Robin?
Yeah. But the passage of scripture I'm going to look at.
Oh, whoa, Rob, we're about to get all in trouble now.
The passage of scripture I'm going to look at is Matthew 16. Let me kind of introduce that to you and let's just talk a minute. What is the single most popular conversation topic?
The weather.
We always talking about the weather.
Always worried about the weather.
Trying to predict it. And we've come up with sayings or wives' tales or whatever you want to call them about the weather. Y'all know any?
Yeah.
Let me hear it.
If red at night, sailor's delight.
Well, thank you, Shane.
I've heard that if you lay a rock outside and it's wet, that means it's raining.
It's raining.
Mm-hmm. That's real good.
If it thunders in January, it's going to frost in April.
What's it? April showers brings May flowers.
Yeah. There you go.
There you go.
If it thunders in February, on that day, it'll frost in April.
Okay. If the snow stays on the ground for longer than 3 days, it's going to snow again within a week.
I never heard of that.
Y'all have heard weather sayings before.
Thought we covered it.
Jesus here uses an old weather saying. Now, I was shucking corn one day. We were sitting around shucking corn. I said, "Whoo, the shucks thick on this corn. We're going to have a bad winter." This old man named Mr. Auburn said, "No, you can't go with that stuff no more." I said, "Why not, Mr. Auburn?" He said, "You just can't go by that stuff. That stuff don't work no more." I said, "What happened?" He said, "Well, when they went to the moon, they knocked a hole in something and that stuff don't work no more." So he said it didn't, but I think it may. Let me read the scripture to you.
Where are we at?
Matthew 16, the first four verses, 1-4. One day the Pharisees and the Sadducees came to test Jesus, demanding that he show them a miraculous sign from heaven to prove his authority. He replied, "You know the saying, red sky at night means fair weather tomorrow. Red sky in the morning means foul weather all day. You know how to interpret the weather signs in the sky, but you do not know how to interpret the signs of the time. Only an evil, adulterous generation would demand a miraculous sign. But the only sign I will give you is the sign of Jonah." Then Jesus left them and went their way. Now, Jesus is straightening them out. He called them an evil and adulterous generation because they were demanding a sign. They wanted a sign. They wanted to know exactly what the bare minimum effort was to get to know Jesus. Now, you're saved by grace. Grace is what saves us. I'm not saying anything other than that. But this group of folks wanted to know when Jesus would come back so they could get right with Jesus right before he came back and wouldn't have to deal with knowing him and pledging their life to him. And Jesus says, that's evil. And we live in a day and time where people are making good livings by prophesying, they call it. And they're emotionally manipulating people to give them money because somehow, some way, they become entitled or enlightened and they know the secrets that nobody else knows. They can interpret the Bible that nobody else can interpret. And the Bible clearly says not even the angels in heaven know when. So there's a couple of biblical truths I want to share with you today. Number one, Jesus is coming back. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I'll tell you about timing is it's closer today than it was yesterday.
Well, we're one day closer.
I'm going to give you both of them.
Jesus is coming back, and nobody knows when he's going to do it. And rather than looking around here for some secret code, some entitled information that nobody else has, rather than looking for that, let's live like we believe Jesus is coming back and he is who he says he is. And I believe that would honor Jesus more. I believe then we could talk about the weather, have a good time, and live for Jesus and honor and glorify him. And we, when we live for Jesus and honor and glorify him, we attack the root of the problem, which is sin. We don't just attack the symptoms. If I start talking about red bugs, start scratching around here a little bit, y'all going to start feeling things crawl on y'all. Just because of power of suggestion. Jesus is suggesting to us, stop trying to fix things by attacking the symptoms. Attack the root of the problem, which is sin. And the only way to attack it is through his grace that he provided us when he first came. He came as a suffering servant. He came as a little innocent lamb led to slaughter. But folks, he's coming back as the Amen. King of kings and the Lord of lords. And every knee shall bow and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Stop looking for a sign and just live like you believe that.
Amen. Stop looking for a sign and start living for Jesus. Is that the message that we just heard today? I say this, the best life is the life that you have in him. That's the true life. That's exactly what I was going to say. You took the words right out of my mouth. Well, I appreciate the life that y'all share with us today. A little bit of y'all's life, some father-son, some son being taught how to hunt, mm-hmm. and even brought old Grunt into it. Well, we've had a lot of fun, and we appreciate you guys coming out, but that's going to do it. I got to get to Top Hat. I'm about hungry.
Sounds good.
Does that sound good to you guys?
Sounds good to me.
Well, that's going
to
do it tonight at the Hayden Outbound Podcast. I'm Philip.
I'm Shane.
I'm Robin.
I'm Jake Risher.
We'll see y'all next week.